Well, speaking of flood, this is a quick one, but in
Yes.
Queanbeyan, they have a flood every 20 years, essentially. It's roughly about every 20 years where the river gets to about 9 meters. Enormous. And the last one that happened, we had dead bodies floating down the river
Oh, cool. Cool,
because the
cool,
old
cool, cool,
cemetery,
cool, cool.
which hasn't been used since the
Oh.
80s, the
Oh.
old cemetery's on the river.
Oh, man. Oh,
Oh, it
beloved.
got waterlogged.
It flushed away.
Are you saying that last one was like in the year 2012 and yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tonight in the Pixelcast Arena, it is fight night, and boy, do we have a match for you. In the blue corner, wearing its white shorts, is the heavy favourite, the one, the only, the PS5. In the green corner, wearing black, is the plucky upstart looking to shake things up, the Xbox Series X. So without any further ado, let's get ready to rumble! Sorry about that, folks. I have always wanted to do that. Anyway, it's Pixelcast 44 time, and I'm your host, Matt Hewson. Joining me tonight to talk all things next-gen are three fine minds ready to dissect and examine the new consoles. First up, the ever-present and ever-wise Tim Henderson.
Wise?
Well, you know,
let's see,
in
I mean,
comparison.
Here's some feedback. I feel like you were like too pent up and like too excited, and I think you need to take another take, and you know, let's get ready to rumble. Like,
No,
it just wasn't deep and bellowing enough. I feel like you have a
wasn't
really
deep
good
enough.
voice for it, and you just kind of
I
got
just ran over
nervous
the
in the
top of it.
moment.
Yeah, run over the top of it. Oh well, maybe one day it'll come around again. Next, we have a man who probably won't get any one of the new consoles anytime soon, so I don't know why we even asked him on. Ken Lee.
Well, it's because nobody else gets on.
That's fair.
And also, I'm always impressed by how much effort you put into the opening, because I put in like zero effort whatsoever.
Yeah, I know. It's the one thing I've got going for me.
Yeah,
it's all I've
that's
got.
True.
Yeah, yeah.
That was so backhanded. My
it
God,
was, wasn't it? It was just glorious. Lucky I don't have a bloody self-esteem issues or anything like that. It's all right, Ken. I'll live. The final voice is one that we don't hear enough on the Pixelcast, but it's always a pleasure when she's here. The one, the only, Sarah Ellen.
Dudes, I'm just sitting back with a bowl of popcorn and watching this shitstorm go.
Yes, it is a bit of a shitstorm at the moment, especially considering breaking news. I don't know if you guys saw it, but we'll save it for the second half of the podcast. But we are talking the next-gen systems. We've got the info, we've got the dates, we've got the prices. We're going to break it down and talk about what's what. But before we get to that, Sarah.
Yes.
I hear you have a bit of a Greek god obsession.
Oh, dude, I've had a Greek god obsession since I was a little kid. So
yeah
no when no yeah okay all right yeah. Horrible. No, when I was young, I absolutely adored reading Greek myth, and you know, all about the gods and all that side stuff. I just thought it was really rad. I thought they're really interesting stories, and so when I heard about Hades in early access, I was all aboard that train, and then I stupidly did not get time to play it, so I grabbed it on the Switch. And I am absolutely loving it. And probably not for the reasons that people think. So, I think everybody is like 245% on this hype train. So, like, everybody's going, it's amazing, it's fantastic. And I'm seeing so many people completing it. And I've done about 47 runs, and I still haven't gotten past second boss. Because I am totally in it for more for the narrative than the roguelike. Like, don't get me wrong, I am totally there, but for in this one, I've enjoyed the narrative more because it's taken some of my perceptions of how I kind of positioned a lot of these Greek myths, and it's had a really nice different take on some of the kind of the Greek gods and goddesses that are in it. So for me, seeing Artemis, and you always see her as this, kind of envision her as this very feral kind of goddess of the hunt. And she's kind of betrayed in this almost late teens, early 20s, slightly insecure.
Antisocial.
Yeah, kind of character, which I found really interesting. And it's also interesting to see the roguelike having it has a much better purpose than what I've seen other roguelikes. Like, you know, I was mainlining Slay the Spire earlier this year and I love it, but, you know, I was in it mainly for the card collecting. For this, I'm loving seeing how the story unfolds and how the relationships unfold between the characters and not so much the mechanic, but the whole death and pseudo rebirth cycle is done with a lot better purpose in this, because it makes complete sense. When he dies, he's going back to the underworld to basically be berated by his father over and over again. And it keeps building that relationship there as well. So look, that's honestly what I've been enjoying about it. I've been watching everybody else, loving it, absolutely loving it. And probably more people are talking about the mechanics on it more than what I am. Like, I grabbed it on the Switch.
I agree with you. Yeah. The story's fantastic. And what they've done really well, when playing it through early access, because day one I had it, they've added a lot of story for early access users that people that weren't in early access are going to miss forever.
Yeah.
Because there's stuff about just little things that make mention to how this is kind of a game in development. You know, for example, he'll walk through and there'll be a part of the kind of the home base that's still being rebuilt, and he'll make offhand comments saying, you know, oh, our contractors haven't been working hard enough to get this finished yet, you know, and it'll just be like this throwaway comment, and he'll say that. Or when something new's added, he'll make specific mention of it. He'll go, hang on a minute, that wasn't here last time I came here. That's new, you know, and things like that. They added all these little fun little tidbits all the way through. And it's obvious that Supergiant make games with story at the forefront and have unique ways of telling them. And to do so in a roguelike is an achievement
that
I don't think anyone has ever done. Because the story gets better and better every time you play.
Yeah.
And so do they really have story at the forefront, or do they just have like a really good scenario and then kind of build on that?
I think they tell the story in an interesting way, which kind of puts it right at the front.
It's an unexpected way. I think people expect this kind of mythology to be a lot stuffier, and that they're able to approach it narratively with a sense of snark and humor, as well as I think what people sometimes fail to recognize about it is we're coming in at a point where, you know, Zagreus is kind of, you know, going back down into, you know, Tartarus and stuff. But these are gods, right? We don't know how long he's really, really been doing it for. And we don't know how long he's been rebelling against his father. Just imagine that this shit has been going on for eons.
Mm.
And the way that they can keep the relationship between father and son distant and kind of berating, but at the same time you can still see a connection with them, and then acknowledging that this situation between the two of them has been going on for so long. I think that's the bit that sometimes people fail to kind of remember. But I missed it completely through early access. As I said, I did grab it in early access, but then just I didn't have time to play it on PC. Switch, I'm loving. So I think some other people had some bugs. I haven't. The main load at the beginning is a little bit slow, but controls are slick.
Yeah, it's super slick.
Yeah, portable is working fine. The screen, like how they use the screen and everything like that, so it makes sense. It's legible. It's not overly disruptive. It gives me another ability to kind of, you know, just run through a run very quickly when I have a bit of a break. So the portability of it is, of course, an added bonus. The currencies that they use in it are also really, really interesting. So the currency to upgrade Zagreus' skills, the currency to upgrade the weapons, the currency within the run itself, and also the, I guess, the currency of building relationships with the other characters in it.
Yes.
They're all separate. You have ways potentially of farming for it if you really want to, which is probably why I've been doing 47 runs, because I've just been farming some of the things that I want to do, because it's like, I want to build a relationship with Dusa. No idea why, just want to.
She's great.
Yeah, and wanting to, like, you know, wanting to get some more darkness so that I can upgrade the number of times that I can die before, you know, I finish a run per se. So having that there as well. And then, you know, the currency within the run where you can buy additional boons and things if you really want to. So it kind of, the way that they've considered each way that the player can approach it is really, it's a lot more creative, because it's not just considering what's happening within the run. It's also considering the interactions that are happening outside of each attempt as well, and how that impacts each attempt as you go through, because you're not just kind of just upgrading the character or upgrading the weapons. You're also upgrading the relationships, which builds impact into the game as well. And it blows my mind, and I'm so pissed off that I haven't played Pyre. Because everybody was going on about that at the time, and I was just like, dude, no time. And now I really want to go back.
Surely there'll be a Switch version of that soon. The other games are on Switch now, so.
Well, maybe not. I don't think the others are. Bastion and Transistor are both on Switch.
Bastion and Transistor are both there.
Yeah.
Pyre's not.
Pyre's been out for a while though.
Yeah, but it's PS4, I think.
Yeah, it is. And that's the concern, is that it's been out for a while and it's still not anywhere else.
It's on PC as well.
Yeah. But it's not on any other console at the moment.
No.
And there's not really any fair argument for them to be prioritizing that right now.
Not with Hades, no.
No.
I will, so I'm obviously in a different spot. I'm about 60 hours in this game so far.
Damn, sir! Actually, we should rewind and say, so how vindicated are you feeling right now?
Oh, it's glorious. I'm sitting there watching. I've been yelling about this game for so long, and see all of Twitter be going, hey, how good is Hades? I know, I've been saying. even from day one, it was a supremely polished product. They've made a lot of changes along the way. They've added currencies and they've adjusted things. Like the original Hydra, which is the second boss, used to be significantly harder than it is now. I noticed that because I bought it on Switch as well, and I started a new run. It's always interesting to me, a roguelike, one that you've kind of mastered almost, and then you go back and start again and see how much of that mastery is from your upgrades and how much is just from learning the game and getting better at it. And so, I mean, the first time, it took me a long time to get past the Hydra in early access, because like I said, it was hard. In this one, it's only got two lots of the extra heads that pop out in this battle. It had actually four originally, so it was really hard. I think that's they did that to kind of, it was kind of like a gate to stop people getting further than they developed. So it acted as this kind of wall.
It's like an artificial ceiling.
Yeah, sort of thing, to stop people pushing too far ahead while they were developing. But so I picked it up, and within three runs I had gotten to Cerberus. So that's not quite the final boss. It's like one encounter before the final boss. So that shows, like, it's a game that you can beat with skill. Like, obviously it helps with all the upgrades and things you get. But I have played a lot of it. That is the point to make there, but it is a game that rewards skill, not just so much your upgrade and the constant kind of, some roguelikes demand you to just beat your head against the wall and beat your head against the wall and beat your head against the wall until you get the upgrades to improve. Whereas this is a skill-based one, so you never feel cheated, which I think is great.
And I think I liked it more than, like, Slay the Spire felt more like luck.
Yeah.
So it was a lot more chance, a lot more luck. There still has that chance element to it, but there's a way of manipulating that a little bit to your favor. So So I'm still getting that component that I like, but I'm also getting a different aspect of a roguelike that I haven't been as engaged in previously, which is the real, you know, the industrial strength upgrades outside of the actual gameplay itself.
The gameplay
loop. Yeah.
Yeah, you're so right. It's just the way you're talking about this. It almost sounds like there is potential that one day you may enjoy a Souls game.
Probably not. Go away.
Let's not push it.
Go away.
All right. On that sour note, Ken.
Oh, wait, very quickly.
Yes.
Switch or PC?
Switch.
Both work really well. The Switch version is butter smooth. Like, it's smoother than Dead Cells.
Dead Cells is pretty smooth.
Dead Cells had issues when it launched, too. Mm. They fixed most of those.
I played Dead Cells after.
Hades is smooth, buttery smooth.
If you're going to PC controller.
Yeah, you have to.
Yeah, a lot. Some people have said that they have gotten pretty good with keyboard and mouse, but a lot of people have said that if they're going PC, they're going with a controller. And I think it has...
It does tell you that at the start of the game.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay. So it's a controller. All right.
Mm. Yeah. All right, Ken. We heard your voice there. Let's hear about how you disagree with my review of Serious Sam. He says.
It's just not good. It's just not good. Like, all right. Serious. I feel like either fight, you know, a fight, mix between.
Can you have been a downer for the last few episodes now?
Sorry, what?
You have been a downer for the last few episodes now. You have not liked a game in the last month and a half.
No, I really like Star Renegades, but that's something else. That's something new I've played. I really like Ghost of Tsushima. I played that for like, I talked about it like for four episodes straight.
And we had to ban you.
Wonder something terrifying. That game came out a while ago now.
Yeah, that's right. Serious Sam is Serious Sam, right? And on one hand, you could say, oh, you know, what were you expecting? It's always going to be what it was. It is exactly what you expect it to be. And on one hand, that's true. And I think your review says as much. And that's why you gave it a B.
Gave it a B minus, I think. I was actually,
a minus there.
One of the lower people on Metacritic. For it, like I was well below the average review score on Metacritic.
I know, but at some stage, it's like, yes, it's Serious Sam, and you are getting exactly what you're expecting in a Serious Sam game. But at some stage, it's like, but is that enough? Is that good enough for now? For right now, it's like it's very much a product of its time. In 2020, Serious Sam 4 in 2020 feels very much 1993.
Mm.
And on one hand, you could say, and like I said, you said so in your resume, not resume.
That's a weird.
I'm also at work, and I need to do some resume reading, so that's on my mind.
We're crossing the streams.
Yeah, crossing my professional life and this life. Mm. And like, yes, you could say that, that, you know, what were you expecting? This is exactly what you were, you know exactly what you're getting into when you get into a Serious Sam game. But yeah, like in 2020, is that good enough? Is that enough? And admittedly, I probably didn't play as much as you did. Because you did it for review and I did it for Player 2 Plays. I did a video. But probably about an hour and a half in, I just couldn't bear to go on anymore. It's just like everything. The character models look bad. The one-liners are bad, but not bad in a good way or like bad in a kind of funny self-referential way. It's just bad. And you just have wave after wave of enemies coming at you, which is exactly what Serious Sam is supposed to be. But you have the small quick guy that charges at you in hordes, And then you've got the medium-sized person that charges you. And then you've got the big ox-like character that charges at you. And then you've got the shooty guy that stands in a corner that shoots a single shot at you. And then you've got the other guy that shoots four or five shots at you. It's like, at some stage, for me, I just decided that that wasn't enough. That wasn't good enough.
I will say it opens up enemy type a lot as the game gets further on. Sort of, you move from Rome to France, and once you hit France, there's a significantly larger amount of enemy types. So
yeah, but I also at some stage we cannot subscribe anymore to the the first three episodes of this show is kind of shit, but it really gets into its own, like, from season two onwards, right? Like,
how was this marketed? Was it marketed as, like...
It was marketed
as a serious end.
Was it marketed as kind of re-experience a remastered version, or was it marketed as this is a new Serious Sam for this generation?
This is a new... this is new Serious Sam.
This is the next Serious Sam game. And usually, I guess, they kind of... Because they are trading on its name, like when you say Serious Sam, you kind of know what you're going into. You kind of know what you're expecting. It doesn't deviate from that formula.
At all. Well, again, in the second half, there's open parts, which are like the open level from Uncharted. You know how you've got a Jeep and you drive around. There are parts like that later in the game.
It's not the norm, is it?
It is a big part of that second half. It's quite a significant part of it, where you kind of drive around in different vehicles till you get to a certain point to achieve an objective, which is essentially shooting more enemies. But then you get back in your vehicle and cruise around, and you can find things and stuff like that. So it's similar to that kind of Uncharted 4 open map that was in the game. So. In structure, I guess, and it's quite a large part of the game at the end. So,
but just going, like I said, 2 hours in, and I'm like, I could be doing other stuff. Like, I could be doing something else which I enjoy far more. And like I said to you, I think in the chat, like, I really enjoyed the first Serious Sam. I enjoyed 2 as well. I didn't really play 3. I really enjoyed those old Serious Sam games.
Those were intentionally dated even when they came out, and the first one came out the year 2000 thereabout.
No. Yeah, around then, I think. 97, 98.
Yeah, but I was also like 15, 16 when that first Serious Sam, like teenage me liked those games. 40-year-old me does not.
I think my biggest problem with it, and I enjoyed it more than you, and I especially enjoyed it playing co-op with my son. It was a lot of fun in co-op because I guess that kind of just endless wave of enemies is more suited to having a friend along for the ride. But I think the biggest problem for me with it was everything it does, like you said, everything a Serious Sam game you expect from a Serious Sam game, it does it, and it does it well. Like, there are thousands of enemies on the screen. There's no slowdown or anything like that. Technically, it works well. It's ugly as shit, but I guess that's the sacrifice you make when you've got literally hundreds of enemies running at you at once in some places. There's got to be a concession there, I guess. But what got me is there is no attempt to modernize this. Like, the open world bits even... feel, you know, old. They didn't modernize it. Like the combat really needs like a coat of paint. You look at what Doom Eternal has done, or Doom 2016 has done with that fast-paced combat, encouraging you to push forward and giving you that risk reward kind of thing with the executions and stuff. Or you look at, you know,
something dumb like Shadow Warrior is really good. Just gotta throw that out.
Shadow Warrior in the review where it adds the special powers and the double tap moves and things like that mix things up. Whereas Serious Sam is hold your finger on the shoot button, circle strafe, dodge. That's it. And it does that thing really well. But it's perhaps not enough.
But I think Shadow Warrior is is a good comparison. I think Shadow Warrior, like, it leaned into its tropes, it leaned into its silliness, but but it also was self-aware. I felt Shadow Warrior had a level of self-awareness about what it was and what it was aiming to do. I don't get that same feeling out of Serious Sam. I don't want to sort of second guess the developers' intentions or what they were intending to do, but yeah, it just did not, like, that was not enough for me with my time in 2020. Like, there are much better things that I could be doing. And it sounds like Hades is one of those things. That's all I'm saying. I mean, this is what I was asking about, like, whether it was, you know, PC or Switch, because, like, from what we talked about just now, it sounds like, holy smokes, I'm really going to enjoy this. Like, it sounds like really good, like, hearty use of my time. I'm going to walk away from that, like, feeling, like, satisfied.
And we're going to come here next time. Ken's going to come back and say, I played for an hour.
I have.
And I was so effing bored, and I don't want to play anymore.
Either that or it's all he's going to talk about for the next four episodes.
One of the two. It's either or with Ken. That's what you get. Yeah. All right. We've bashed Sam into submission. Tim.
Yeah, I guess.
You've been getting old school.
Yeah, I think throwbacks is maybe a theme at the moment.
Yeah, it is.
It is kind of appropriate. Last episode, I think I spent like a good 5 minutes complaining that this generation just does not have any Ridge Racer or Daytona, and I want a new one of those. And then Hot Shots Racing just kind of drops out of almost nowhere. And that's not what I was asking for. What I was asking for was a new one of those, not a let's recreate exactly what this was, except a bit fancier. So Hot Shots Racing, it's not even Daytona. It's more like the missing game between Virtual Racing and Daytona. It's kind of Virtual Racing on steroids.
Yeah, with a better drift system.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that actually sold me was it's actually made by Sumo, who did pretty good on the OutRun ports and also the Sonic Racing stuff.
Sonic Racing.
So, and that drifting there is important, actually. That's a key. So this is just a straight up, borderline, completely bare bones arcade racer. Mercifully, like, fairly reasonably priced.
And free on Game Pass. So.
Huh, well, I'm playing on Switch. I would imagine it has to run in native 4K if you have the Xbox One X. It's not...
Yeah, it runs, yeah. I was playing it just before this podcast, so...
But no, I mean, this is not something you buy thinking, I'm going to sink my teeth into this. This is my game for the month. This is something you buy like, oh man, I'm going to have like a little bit of time in the afternoon over the next couple of weeks. And maybe once or twice some mates over with drinks and we're going to play Hot Shots Racing. And it'll be fun. You're not going to go, this is going to be our game for the next year. It's not going to replace Destiny.
Or Hades.
Or Hades, even. But, you know, it has a very simple target and it achieves it. Pretty well. It actually looks pretty nice as well. Like, they've done a good, like, it's just blue-ass skies, just bright colors everywhere, no texture mapping.
It's kind of that memory look, you know, how you imagine these old games looked. And then
this is what Virtual Racing looked like in my mind.
Yeah, exactly. Before you go back and look at it. In real life, yeah.
I think there are 16 courses maybe in total, I'm thinking.
I think so, yeah. Four GPs.
Yeah, there are four sets with four sets of four. I feel like the one thing that's maybe missing is like the courses could get a little bit more out there. Like they're missing like an unlockable just course that's like set in a theme park or something where like you just end up on the roller coaster tracks.
Yeah. It doesn't quite lean into it enough.
Yeah, it gets 80% of the way there. I mean, this is... I'm enjoying this game a lot. I'm happy I bought it. It is very much a 7 out of 10 game, but because it's filling, like, such a hole, like, such a void. Like, it's a very easy-to-recommend kind of 7 out of 10 game.
Well, it's the sort of game I would easily suggest playing with a few friends over.
Oh, if you can... Perfect. If you don't live in Melbourne...
Yeah. Yep.
It's not going to become your, like, let's fall back on this game, but you would get a couple of good afternoons with beers.
Yeah.
Or pizza with this game. It would be a good movie night substitution game. easily. I mean, it controls well, drift is tight, got like these dumb little characters to choose, there's like decent variance between the cars. Do make sure you figure out that drift though, because it does work very much in the whole drift ability turbo gauge, and I did not realize for the first half hour that I had a turbo gauge. It doesn't explain that very well.
No.
But you have a turbo button, use it.
The drivers, I notice, are quite aggressive. Like,
oh, that's like part of why you also games. Need to like learn the drift, because that drift comes into play. Like, but they will ram you, and you'll start drifting all over the place. So you need to familiarize, because it's arcadey as shit with a drift. Like, you can still steer in that drift, and you just have to figure out the steering mechanic.
The balance post, yeah, the balance point, yeah.
I mean, it's straightforward, it's super fun, it did everything I wanted it to other than look like a new game, because I do really want, like, I want a new shiny ass, like, AAA production arcade racer, and I don't know if I'll ever get it. This is a very happy throwback, it's a good week, I don't know how much more of it I'll play.
Partly and because it is on Game Pass.
And is it, yeah, Xbox. That makes it... It's on everything,
I think.
I think
it's on PC, Xbox. I don't think it's on PC,
it's
Game Pass.
It's definitely on PlayStation no, not as on well. PC. I imagine it has to be coming to PC at some point.
It's on Steam, but I don't think it's on. Yeah, it's just not on the Game Pass there yet. PC, which could change.
Yeah, PC, Switch, dumb characters that figured out. Like, I think one of the Japanese guys is technically a cyborg.
Yeah. And the Poms are like a Pommy from Money sort of snobby bloke.
He's
and
very. Again, very unashamed. It feels like a side project of Sumo. It's like, we don't have a big contract from Sega at the moment. We know how to make racing games. We've worked with Sega on racing games. Let's make one that Sega would have made in 1993, but prettier.
Yep. Excellent. Well, we might leave it there. We're going to let Tim find some music to get us all hyped for the fight. And maybe Eye of the Tiger or something along those lines, if it wasn't under copyright. And we'll be back shortly to talk all things new consoles. After what seemed like an eternity, we finally know what is happening with the next-gen launch. We have the details, we have the prices, we have the dates. There are also some pretty big surprises to talk about too. But let's get things off with the terror that was the pre-order. Tim, on a scale of 1 to 10, how fucking terrible was it?
You're asking me? I wasn't involved at all. I'm not in Australia, dude.
Yeah, but you've got an objective outsider perspective.
It was funny to watch. As someone who had just decided I don't actually know, I don't want to buy both consoles, at least not early on, and I don't know which one I actually want, I may as well just become a Switch / PC gamer for a bit and see how this plays out. It was kind of awesome to see the first time in a while I decided not to get on a console super early be the one time I am super glad that I did not. I out of curiosity was looking how to get into it in Japan, and like, they seem a bit, Japan's pretty experienced with stupid like raffles for like a chance to buy something. So my impression is that they may actually be more like, the Sony's website had like a list of all the major retailers and when like they were opening for the raffle for a chance to buy a PS5.
That question, so in Japan, would they still be physical sales? Or is it online? Like, the way that it was here was pre-order online. I think that was the kicker.
I'm actually not entirely sure. I feel like there's a higher chance that it could be like physical walking into a store.
That's what I meant. That's what I seem to get the sense that in Japan, you'd still like, even with a raffle, you'd go to a shop and get a ticket.
I feel like there could be both options available, but like they might have people lining up outside the store, and like they could have just as good a chance as somebody on the internet. Because it's only in like the last year that this country's actually really started to push towards cashless payments for things.
Yeah, because I was going to say that, because it's completely different in terms of the preferred modes of payment. So it would have been very
good. I did find one PS5. I think I shared it in the Player 2 chat. There's one PS5 listed on Amazon Japan for like $3,000 or something. Like, at that point, you may as well actually do the just buy a gaming PC thing.
Yeah, it'd be cheaper.
Yeah. But it just seemed like whatever was happening here was really happening in the online space.
Yeah, I mean, the stuff, like, especially the Xbox stuff in particular seemed like really bad, where like people who had gift cards were able to get it, but people with credit cards couldn't, so it wasn't even those who were prepared or like...
So with the EB especially, what happened with the first one, they got hammered by bots, big time, and scalping bots, because unlike Sony, Xbox thought they were doing the right thing by letting people know when the pre-orders were going to go live. Mm-hmm. But in doing that, they also gave douchebags time to write scripts and bots to attack that. And so essentially anyone legitimately trying to get an Xbox was trying to compete in filling out forms with a robot. So that hammered the first one. So EB have actually gone and cancelled quite a significant number of those first wave orders and have reallocated that, and which is why the final, they had three waves that day. The third wave lasted quite a long time, like in comparison to the others, it lasted a good half an hour, 45 minutes.
Optimal
and a
time.
Lot of those were restocks from the bot sales from original, because they have to manually go through and find which ones are bot sales and kind of take it that way.
That's really terrible. I guess working for EB, man.
It really was. The thing with the PlayStation, of course, they didn't tell anyone when they were going live. They just went, hey, here it is, bang. I was driving to work. Paul rings me. I'm on a highway. There's nowhere to pull over. And he's ringing me. They're up now. They're up. We got up early to watch the PS5 experience and reveal, and they kind of alluded that it would be tomorrow that pre-orders would go.
Yeah, they almost said.
And then I went, all right, I'll go to work. And then I get a phone call from Paul saying, shit, they're live now. Oh, crap. And I did work in record time from the highway from where I was, ran upstairs and got one straight away. No worries.
It was interesting because somehow in that time that the PlayStation orders went out, this is literally how my shit went down, right? So I text my brother to basically go, dude, the PlayStation pre-orders are out. And he, my brother is... attempts to be my conscience, and he fails terribly. So he's kind of like, do you really need that right now? You've got quite a few other things that you're playing. And I said, well, look, if you're not going to enable me, I'm going to go and text mum. So I called mum, and I'm like, look, you know, they've opened. And she goes, and this is what you've been wanting to pre-order, not the other. And I said, yeah, it is really what I want to pre-order. And she goes, okay, so what does it come with? And I said, it comes with this. And she goes, oh, what other things can you get? And I said, get this. And she goes, you should probably get the charging cradle as well. And I'm like, oh my God, I love you. Jesus. And this is what I found really interesting, is that I had the time to contact two people and have an existential crisis, and I still got a PlayStation 5, a launch one. And I was just, that's what made the Xbox experience so surreal to me, because that went out in 15 minutes. Completely, because I remember I was texting my brother and because his mate wanted to get one, and they'd gone out for coffee, stupid, and I said to them, look, dudes, you know he's not going to get one, and my brother's just like, oh my gosh, he's so mad. So I think I didn't have that same experience as other people, and that's why I don't think I have the same level of righteous rage.
Oh man, those are pissed people on Twitter and
PlayerU chat. Just the news that I alluded to just before we went on with the podcast, it just came out that Target, who seemed to be kind of like this ray of light in amongst the insanity of all people,
Target? Had a, really?
pre-order. Their website stayed up. It didn't crash. Yeah. Everyone got in. They did tell you when you pre-ordered it that they had to confirm that you got one. So they kind of went on a, you know, everything's going to come in. We'll count our numbers and we'll confirm within 24 hours if you got one. All right. Okay. That seems
as logical. Reasonable as anything. Seems
what they can do. But in the end, they've sent out, you know, I missed out on a Target one. I got the email that said, you know, you didn't get one. And I went, okay, fair enough. But people that did get the email that said, congratulations, you've got it, tonight have been getting emails saying, nope, sorry, you didn't get it.
Oh, you're kidding.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. Gobbets. Oh, that's insane.
That just happened. Yeah.
It just happened. No. It is absolutely insane. So yeah, so all these people. I ended up pre-ordering 3. I didn't get the Target one. I got a second wave EB one, and I got an Amazon one when it was up. So I still haven't been confirmed when my Amazon one is coming. So my EB one's kind of my backup because that's easy enough to cancel. Mm. You can just wander in and cancel that. That's no worries. Mm. So if I don't get a launch one with the Amazon, I'll have to go to the EB one. But it is hard. I mean, if I was just a consumer, I'd be upset because I wanted an Xbox but didn't get one. But as an editor of a video game website,
it's kind of a make or break.
It's a little bit different.
Yeah. You don't have that launch day coverage. That's a problem.
Yeah,
it is a problem, and especially this year, Player 2 has gone through significant growth, and then to all of a sudden not be able to meet the expectations of the new readers, then you know, fickle audiences, we could potentially lose people.
Something I am curious about, because I mean, I have been out of Australia for a long time now. PlayStation 4, weirdly, against all expectations at the time, came in Japan like a quarter year after the rest of the world. Yeah. Pre-ordering that for me was like super easy. Like I just went into a store one weekend to put my pre-order down. Like there was nothing vaguely resembling any sort of hustle.
That was the same with both last gen.
Yeah, it was like, really easy.
You just went into EB. Here's me $50 deposit. Done.
Yeah, I remember debating with one friend who's like, oh, this is crazy. No one's got the money. I was like, oh, dude, these are both going to sell out. But even in all of my confidence, I did not see it happening in the space of a TV episode.
It's a bad assumption. It's probably a reasonable assumption. It's COVID, I assume.
Yeah.
It's just it's the capacity to manufacture, the capacity to ship. It's a whole lot of
still
going to
be lot of them. I think it's a lot of cases.
75,000 roughly in Australia PlayStation 5s. And Microsoft haven't released numbers for the Xbox because they're still trying to produce. They've apparently got more coming, and they want to confirm before Christmas.
But what you've had is people stuck inside, unable to take the holidays they've planned, who've probably saved the money from those holidays that they have planned and have also been able to learn and read about this stuff and are like, I need something to do over Christmas since we're not going to Bali anymore.
I was going to say, like, COVID has probably and most likely impacted the manufacturing, but COVID has also caused a lot of pent-up pressure in consumers.
Mm.
Like, people are ready to splash out because, they might have saved a bit more money. But also, like, there is no way, at least in Victoria, there's no way you could pre-order this physically. Like, there is no option.
No.
No.
That actually kind of makes sense in this environment where you should be encouraging people not to.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So everybody, you know, like with PS4 and Xbox One, you could have rocked up to a JB or an EB at some point and said, I'm going to pre-order. Like, none of that is available. Like, that avenue is.
JB were doing in-store, but they were really pushing you to do it online.
Yeah. Like, so that option, like that avenue of physically going to a store is minimal. You'd have to. So all of that pressure is directed at an online shop. And I mean, on one hand, you could say, oh, they should have anticipated it, but I don't think anybody could have anticipated just the scale and the size of the demand. And
I think especially in the case of Xbox, it was a surprise for a lot of people because, you know, PlayStation have had the lead for such a long time. Mm. I don't think people were expecting the Xbox to go. But then Xbox did something super massive just before pre-order.
Oh, there we go. We found our segue.
I got it. Hey, hey.
You're right. They announced they're dropping the price of the Series X at the Tokyo Game Show because still nobody in Japan wants one.
No. They bought Bethesda. They bought ZeniMax.
For $7.5 billion.
So they now own Elder Scrolls. They now own Doom. They now own Dishonored. They now own all these amazing...
You missed the only important one.
Prey?
Wolfenstein.
Oh. Wolfenstein, yeah. Yes. But they own all of
them. Can I also mention, it will be the first time that they will have a Elder Scrolls game on most likely fewer flipping consoles to begin with.
No.
Unlike Skyrim that works on a toaster.
Skyrim's going to be a launch title for Series X.
Oh, no.
But I want that amount of money. I think especially during COVID, the rich are getting richer at a faster rate. And we're just used to hearing these big numbers. Put it in perspective, that is close to the combined cost that Disney paid for Marvel and Star Wars.
Yeah. It was a smart move.
Considering Skyrim sold over 30 million copies.
Now, Skyrim is a big system. Well, Game Pass seller in particular.
Game Pass seller. Mm-hmm. So Phil Spencer's come out and said games will be like a case-by-case basis whether they're exclusive or not. I have some theories. My theories are they'll probably leave Elder Scrolls on multiple systems because it's the big hooer and they will sell squillions of it. Mm. But the next tier down will probably become exclusive. So there's every chance that Wolfenstein and Doom and those kind of next ones down from Skyrim, or whatever Skyrim sequel is, will be exclusive to Xbox. And I mean, at the very least, they're all going to come day one to Game Pass.
Yeah.
So, you know, PlayStation will have to pay $120 or whatever they're paying for a new game these days in Australia for the PlayStation 5, whereas it's just part of your Xbox Live subscription.
Yeah. It is a very long term. They're looking to sway over the course of this generation.
So they hit 15 million subscribers to Game Pass at the moment.
Yeah.
So that's 15 million times $15.
When do you think that's going to go up to 20? I know that's eventually going to happen.
It possibly will, but I think they'll say, 15 is for the ultimate Game Pass. So that's PC, Xbox, and Gold altogether. So there are different levels. But yeah, so $10 to $15 per person times $15 million. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
And it's only going to get bigger.
Yeah. And you imagine, we've talked about Game Pass as a value proposition multiple times on this show. But Xbox games, Bethesda games, and right now, EA as well.
EA games, yep.
That is a massive, massive value for the cost.
Yeah, and I mean, and the other thing that I noticed too, now, Xbox game studios are essentially the biggest player in Western RPGs now.
Yeah.
Obsidian's
with Xbox now.
You've got Obsidian,
yep.
You've got Bethesda, you've got In Exile, you've got Playground doing Fable.
Yep.
You know, that's a lot of RPG action.
And it really kind of balances out against PlayStation, which has a lot of the
single player, third person adventure games.
And also the JRPGs. Yeah. So, that's where, you get a lot of the Square Enix home.
It makes Final Fantasy 16, and I think it's only timed for a year, a much more important exclusive for Sony now.
It does. Yeah.
And that's the thing. It's like it banks on a very different market. But no, Matt's right. It's completely cornered that Western RPG
market. I mean, essentially, the only big name that's not there is BioWare, and are they a big name anymore? Well, that's,
they're a big name, but...
Yeah.
They're on the cusp of losing that.
They are on the cusp of losing that name. So, I mean, that's a huge deal for Xbox. The biggest surprise on the PlayStation side of me was how cheap the discless version was. Mm, they must be taking a significant hit on that discless version.
I was pretty confident with that early on that they would be happy to take the hit to lock people into PlayStation Network pricing. They will, yeah, they, two it, game sales and they're going to make up the difference.
Yeah.
That's it. Well, especially considering they're charging $120 a game in Australia is the recommended retail.
Yeah, it's, you get locked out of the pre-owned market pretty quick. Mm. So that's a problem. Like basically with having the disc version, you get the benefit of being able to eventually get some games cheaper.
Yeah. No, unless I'm in a position to own a secondary console for a guest room or something, I am absolutely getting a disc version. Partly because I actually want the Blu-ray player.
Yeah, I still use my Blu-ray player.
So. I'd like a UHD
Blu-ray player. I think it's easier to sell the Series S as a discless thing because it's kind of like a Game Pass box, and that's all it is.
The catch there is that like that. It was almost because that $300 price point is gold. They're not selling it to the launch people. They're selling it to parents. Like, I can afford to buy my 12-year-old kid this. This is a reasonable price for a Christmas present. Yeah. But that is a tiny ass hard drive.
It is.
And those memory cards are fucking expensive.
In saying that, though, Microsoft has made huge strides in modular installation for the games, and they've forced developers to do so. So they reckon, for example, they use Call of Duty because it's the biggest sinner at the moment with updates of ridiculous sizes. They reckon if Call of Duty Modern Warfare were to come out on the Series S, it would come in at a 15 to 20 gig install instead of 120 gig install.
I mean, you'd hope so.
Yeah, so, you know...
That's not enough for current game sizes, like, unless...
It's not for the current game sizes, but I think there has been some moves made to fix that.
I guess time's really going to tell if those moves are just...
Yeah, enough.
Because that, especially on Australian internet, for example, that's just not a big enough hard drive. And it's like $200+ to, like, expand it. It's two-thirds the price of the console again.
It's $330 Australian for the hard drive upgrade. In saying that, though, a similarly spec'd NVMe drive for a PC is more than that.
Yeah.
So they're selling it for less. For the same spec NVMe drive on a PC, it costs you $380.
I kind of get that, but also just from a perspective of, like, more than half the price of one of the consoles.
Absolutely. But with hard drive space, like all things hard drive space related, it will come down. There is no doubt that price will come down.
Hopefully on the card. I seem to recall a lot of leftover 360 expansion hard drives that just kind of kept their price.
I don't think that'll be the case this time around. It's too easy to...
Hopefully they're a bit more savvy about it. It is nice that they just have something that just works. And I find it weird that Sony is the one with like the super specialized, faster than lightning SSD. Not to say that the one in the Series X is not going to be fast, but that seems to be Sony's like... Big push. Yeah, Sony has a list of licensed third party drives that you can use. You would think it would have to go the other way.
Yeah, you would think. I think you're going to have to do a bit of disc shuffling on the PlayStation. To be honest, I think they'll let you store them on it, and the Xbox lets you do that too. You can store the games on a normal hard drive. And then if you want to keep it a library there to save you from downloading, and then you can transfer them to the internal SSD drive. So I think PlayStation will be doing something similar there.
At the moment, my biggest bank is the level of backwards compatibility, which is still because I've just got a standard PS4 that I got pre-owned at the moment. And, it's not running things the way I want to. And part of me really... wants that backwards compatibility on the PS5 to really work.
They're really being vague about that.
I expect it's all going to work fine, but...
I think a lot of it will work fine, but why they just can't come out and give us some confirmation
is beyond me. I expect there's probably some legal technicality where if there's one game glitches a little bit and they don't know for absolute certain that...
The other games,
but it's kind of getting that clarity. I mean, for me, I got the disc version because I wanted the security of if they're going to say to me, "Oh, the backwards compatibility is going to be attached to discs." I want my discs to work because my PS4 most likely at some point.
I remember coming out of them saying there is no way that any PS4 game that is supposed to work in any form that you have bought it legally is not going to work on a PS5.
I think so. That there'll be some, but there'll be oddities.
I think there'll be some odd ones that will...
I'm saying, like, if you got it through PlayStation Plus, if you bought it on an online sale, if you bought a disc, if it's a game that is... If it's a game that works on PS5, it'll work no matter which version you have.
Speaking of, so as part of the PS5 launch, then they talked about how you get like a whole bunch of awesome games because PlayStation Plus is fantastic and apparently a big, massive yellow Santa Claus. And I don't understand. I think in that they were like, oh, you're going to get Persona 5 and you're going to get Final Fantasy 15. And it's like, yeah, but it sounds like it's the freaking vanilla versions. And I don't get why. They are. Like
it's just the all it is that, you know, when you go into Target or EB and you see the PlayStation Hits range with the red, that's all it is. They're the PlayStation Hits versions of those games. So that's what you're getting.
What's stupid?
So it's like 12 games or something.
I don't actually really think it is actually that stupid. It's actually probably oddly smart, and it's probably going to be more effective than it deserves to be.
Yeah, and look, it's Final Fantasy 15, you can upgrade that. Like, you can get the DLC, and you can make that work. But Persona 5, Royal is a different kettle of fish entirely. So that's where that one didn't make as much sense to me.
But I mean, also, I get like negotiating, the fans of that game are the sort of people who would buy that same game twice.
Yeah, no one's gonna.
And no one who uses that service. Maybe like 0.001% of the people who actually make use of that library are going to care.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know.
I think that library is a very safe bet from Sony because considering how they know how well these games sold.
I own over half of them already.
I own at least.
Either I bought them in an online sale, I got them on disc at launch, or they were in PlayStation Plus once or twice already.
Yeah. So I think it's a almost token gesture from Sony to say, okay, we understand Game Pass is a pretty good thing, so maybe...
I think it's going to work, though. I think some people are going to be pretty stoked when they find that.
Oh, I think it's great. I mean, it's great for consumers. It's good, especially if you missed the PS4 for whatever reason. Mm. It's sensational. There's some really, really good games in that.
Or if you were just like a light PS4 user, then there's a lot of stuff you probably haven't had.
Like, to get to play God of War, I mean, I'm actually interested in playing God of War again on a PS5. That doesn't sound like I don't have to turn my stereo up full volume to drown out the fan from it taking off.
Do we know anything about the cooling in either of these systems? My girlfriend's like, maybe you get a PS5, but we need to bolt it shut behind something so nobody ever sees it.
The Xbox uses fan cooling, PlayStation. But the way the Xbox does it is creates a wind tunnel, hence this kind of square shape.
The whole box of the One X was designed around that because both PS4 and then when I upgraded to Pro, both of them in a TV cabinet, I have to have that cabinet front door open when I'm using it, or else like it just gets super hot in there.
Yeah, my cabinet's completely useless. I stopped using it for my consoles. All my consoles were out. And vertical for some reason, but it was the only way that I could make any of them work. But why do people create cabinets anymore when these things don't freaking work in them? I don't know.
TV cabinets kind of look nice and they would be sensible for like organizing these things if these things didn't overheat all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, that's it.
So how does the PS5 fans
work? The fans work in a more traditional manner, much like... But the reason it's so large is to... help reduce that.
Because what I want is if they just refuse by the time I'm ready to have made a friggin' black one or something that doesn't look completely garish and whatever, I want to be able to hide that thing. I want to be able to put it in the TV cabinet's most dark corner, like shut the friggin' door, like literally only open it to swap the disc and that's it.
They'd have skins for it, surely, at some point.
You'll be able to get a really garish...
But that'll only make it more garish somehow. They're not going to like...
anime skin on the outside of it or something.
Grab a paintbrush. Paint it black. It'll be fine.
it's just paint is incredibly expensive, very difficult to get console. What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, what could go wrong?
Nothing at all.
Some paint up the shed, just give it a crack.
Yeah,
I'm actually pretty amazed by... Did you see the video that Digital Foundry put out?
of the PlayStation or the Xbox?
Of the Xbox. It's actually much smaller than I thought it'd be.
The Xbox Series X. No, it's reasonably sized. It's just the cubishness of it that's a bit strange.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a chonky size.
It's an odd... Well, it's not.
I'm actually okay with that design. I don't know if it would fit in all shelves. I think that's the issue some people have with it. If your TV cabinet is designed for like DVD players and things,
yeah,
you could probably put it on its side.
No, but even on its side, it's like a little taller than.
It's very thick. Yeah, it is. It is a thick boy, but it's actually far smaller than I had envisioned in my head. I haven't seen the one. Do they have one for PlayStation 5?
I don't know that
they haven't physically had one yet. They're being
because
comparison
I saw
images.
Somebody
PS5
did.
Is huge.
Yeah, I've seen some people do some visual sort of like mock-up comparisons, and the PS5 looks
it's gigantic,
like, ginormous.
Like it's a difference between if you're talking about PC, like a full tower versus a
shuttle or
like a mini micro box.
Yeah, it's huge, and then that Series S. Xbox.
It's just a book.
It's like, it's like the size of the Super Nintendo Mini almost, you know? Yeah, it's a midget.
It's not quite that small, but it's slim. It's just tiny. And I'm just sitting there going, how? Because it's like its majority looks like flipping fan / speaker. It was just, I was just amazed. But I couldn't justify
it's weird, like, how
it
much extra.
Yeah.
It's diminishing returns. You need a lot to get that little extra. So if I expect the Series X is probably actually going to end up being a 1080 box instead of a 1440p box. But on the flip side, I also expect that upscaling may be better than people are expecting.
I think they will. And apparently it runs. They showed some video of it running Dirt 5 that was released out into the wild, and it looked really fucking good, I've got to say. Like this, and you know, a racing game's the sort of game that'll burn you if it's not running well, so it looked really good. Like it was comparable to my really high end PC that I was playing Dirt 5, the pre release version of on. So, I mean, it's hard to say for sure on a YouTube video, but
yeah, especially with the quality of streaming on YouTube, you could get like a source. Do you think Microsoft struck like accidental luck by the moment the naming convention is confusing as hell, but I do think they're like setting up a trajectory where in 5 years time it will make sense, and like X will mean premium and S will just mean standard.
Yeah.
And we're just in this super awkward, muddled middle ground at the moment. But do you think they've gotten lucky with just the way the PS5 is designed, where they've managed to like align black is premium and white is cheaper?
Yes. I think that was just I that was just luck because that's continuing the Xbox One.
I mean,
One.
S stands for Sony as well. If you want to keep on going, like they can't call it the Xbox P. That would be Wii all over again.
Some underground guerrilla marketing, you reckon?
I think it's all completely coincidence, but I think it kind of works out for them in a cute way.
I wonder more if PlayStation 5 was kind of trying to channel the old Nintendo days of yore.
It doesn't look similar enough.
I don't know what
it's,
they were trying
look,
to
look. Okay,
channel
we genuinely don't know.
It was foreshadowed in the PSVR. It's that design language kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of moving, I guess, close to an almost Apple aesthetic.
Yeah.
But a lot more toy like.
Yeah.
A lot more kind of going with a design.
It's like if a 19 year old design student designed an Apple product. Yeah.
Yeah. it's very odd. Yeah,
it's not as bad as some gaming PCs I see.
Oh no! Oh my god!
No,
I really want my gaming stuff to not look like gaming stuff. I think is basically where I'm at.
Yeah, I also find it super funny that Alienware is now the subdued.
Yeah, we're
gaming PC.
We've gone in the wrong direction.
They used to be the most obnoxious PCs on the
wrong direction.
Yeah.
But anyway, back on consoles, not in PC.
Or out of nowhere, Amazon just comes and says, hey, we're going to try and do Stadia, and at least it doesn't seem quite as stupid.
That's not hard.
Yeah. It literally looks like they've taken the Switch Pro controller and like added a little purple to it, though.
Yeah, yeah. It looks like Switch Pro controller, and they've looked at Google and said, geez, your ball's that up, we can do better.
It seems, at least so far, like... not complete insanity, like for what it is.
No. I'll be interested to see how many games. Like, it always comes down to games, you know. So,
well, it helps that they're not, to my understanding, I should have read into this a bit more, that they're not doing pay a subscription and you have to buy games.
And
yeah, not doing that, that is a good start. I always seem like they seem to have tiers, like a premium tier, and they seem to have, like, an option that's not lit up. Well, also, they have an Ubisoft one, so that may, like, literally be able to, like, buy publisher subscriptions if that's all you want to play for that month. But also things like you could buy like a certain number of hours per month, which would be super interesting, I think, for parents.
Yeah, it'd be a good way to manage screen time.
It's like you've got 20 hours this month. If you blow it all in the first week, that's it.
Yep. Yep.
I'm getting some head.
Oh, that'd be a nightmare.
I know, especially during summer break. Jeez.
Yeah.
Talking about the kids, I'm freaking dying.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah,
no,
yeah,
you.
That's it.
This is why you have your own password. Like it.
You have your own.
Zing. Yep.
This is why you still secretly have your Series X or PlayStation 5, like in a cabinet next to the whiskey.
I don't have any of my consoles out in the main living area at all. So because I just small children button pressing.
Oh, small. Yeah, just small kids. No.
Let me tell you that small kids find the Xbox on and off sound to be the greatest thing on the planet. Brilliant.
Diddling. No, that's why mine is conveniently hidden behind the television in another room. That and it was working brilliantly until the child could reach the door handle. Now the child can reach the door handle, well, and now we have problems.
You won't fit any of the new consoles in your cupboards.
Nope.
Yep. They're too big.
Too big.
Too big, so they won't be childproof.
Nope.
All right, then. Is there anything else we noticed from the details that we have now? I think my main takeaway is that Sony is still being a little bit shady about some information. Or not shady as such, but not forthcoming with some things. And it's very much a tale of two different stories here. This is not a genuine competition anymore. Xbox are going in one distinct direction and PlayStation are going in another distinct direction. They're almost complementary now. They're not complementary, but they're not direct competitors almost with the way, I guess, they're pointed.
I still think the sales are very much going to resemble the 360 PS3 again. I don't think Sony can do another PS4 this time around.
No, I think so. I think it'll be a lot.
It'll do well, but it's not going to be quite.
They'll both do well. I think they'll both really do well.
But you can see where the early resources have kind of gone. And it is why, like, Microsoft supports so much into backward compatibility and so much into, like, the service end of things. But they don't. But Sony actually has some really spectacular software at launch. But they haven't really ironed out exactly all of their backward compatibility. And I don't think they're trying to hold it back from people. I think they're still, like, frantically trying to get it together for launch day.
Trying to make it work, yeah. It seems very much on the fly for Sony, I guess. Even with the way they did their pre-orders, it was kind of just like, blam, here you go.
I love how people think that's embarrassing, and I'm like, yeah, I don't think Sony's upset that, like, people bought all of their thing in, like, 40 minutes.
No, no. they're not worried.
I get the sense that Sony would have a harder time of it in terms of Microsoft and backwards compatibility would be, like, you know, they have an infrastructure done. It's relatively straightforward. Sony would have a harder time because they have more regions that they're dealing with and more region-specific games that they're probably dealing with than what Microsoft is. So
I think PlayStation's biggest problem, essentially, for backwards compatibility is they've, in the past, used custom CPUs.
Yeah.
Well, they've straight up said they're only doing PS4 games. I would not be surprised if streaming came in to bring the others at some point, if they could ever get that shit together. They had a head start and they still
haven't gone that far, I know. It's... Yeah, I think the one thing for the Xbox actually that surprised me, and that was the one that made me pause, was I had a assumption that if I got an Xbox Series S, it would still play. You know, it's like, you know, the hardware and things should have been playing things like an Xbox One X or a little better.
Actually, that's there is,
but having it locked. It is locked
to the original Xbox backward compatibility.
That's
right.
And
that's a small little kind of a, like, very back of the box, tiny font kind of way.
Yeah, but it's the one thing that made me stop, because I sat there and thought, okay, if I need to get one, I'll get an S. I don't need it immediately, but when it comes out, I'll do that.
Partly why I think
now it's Yeah.
The disc plus PS5 is actually a better value proposition.
Yeah.
It large, is.
I'm not sure. I think there
you
is.
You get the full hard drive to start with.
Yeah, well, there's that. But I think there's a significant amount of people out there that don't have 4K televisions. Mm. They are still running 1080p. Or it might be for the kids' telly, which is usually...
No, I think there's absolutely a space for the Xbox One, but...
Yeah, I think the Series S has definitely got a market. I just worry that because of confusing names and possibly uneducated parents, store staff and things like that, that people are going to get disappointed because they bought the wrong one for their...
They've already said that there's been an increase.
Like, a huge spike in Xbox One X sales have gone, like, way up.
It was, like, what, 300%?
People are probably getting
something stupid.
Packages in the mail going, what, it came already? Wait, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
I know.
Do you reckon Microsoft is honoring refunds on those?
I reckon they will. I reckon... Well, I think they would. They seem to be very... consumer friendly at this
they're
point
in that
time,
still so. Position where that it really is their best interest to be.
And speaking of the one thing I want to leave with is, as of February or March next year, a big PlayStation exclusive is going to have a big green logo that says Xbox Game Studios when it launches, which is
Deathloop
from Bethesda. Yeah. So that's a really interesting place to be.
Interesting. Has to be I'm sure like Microsoft now owns Bethesda, but I'm guessing legally like they'd already made that agreement.
They'd made the
agreement. I'm sure Microsoft had done a great job in selling it. It's like, look how nice we are. We're still letting this happen. But I'm sure if they didn't do that, they would have a lawsuit on their hands.
I mean, look, there's probably a way.
They could settle it, but it's probably better for their PR angle, and it's probably financially more sensible.
Absolutely. It's an easy win for them. And, you know, those games will come to Game Pass when that, I think they had 6 or 12 month exclusivity. I can't remember. So when they're done, they'll come straight to Game Pass, and that's just another.
Do you think Sony's still like kind of reeling from that Bethesda thing, kind of going?
I think they are.
Like they need like who could they cannot afford like Take-Two's like the you cannot afford to buy Take-Two.
No, because they've got Rockstar.
I think like maybe Capcom. Capcom's been rolling at the moment. That would be a good get for them, but like.
I don't think Sony has the sort of money to buy a studio like that for starters.
Capcom, maybe. I don't think Capcom's not as minted as I think we think it is. It's been doing well again lately, but it's not Bethesda big. Yes, Sarah, we can see that the lights went out. Thank you for messaging.
I thought it was...
forgot my lights went out.
Just some mood lighting.
this is the calm down part of the evening.
No,
It's a sign. It's time to finish up. All right, anyone with any last revelations for this exciting time? I mean, I'm excited. So I like new tech. I like to play with new things.
I hate that I'm excited, but I'm very curious because especially since I've intentionally taken a step back because the pattern is a little bit twitchy. Especially since I know I am in Japan, it is entirely possible that the Series X may actually be available to buy in store.
Yeah.
But I'm getting ready to like just kind of move the PS4 out while it probably still has resale value, and then I've lined up a bunch of Switch stuff that I bought on sale. This is my plan for the rest of the year. And then
be a Switch boy.
Yeah, watch a lot of Digital Foundry videos or something, I guess.
Yeah.
All I want, like this next console cycle, is for more games to come to the PC.
Well,
I think you're gonna get that wish.
Is doing that. I think you're gonna get it.
Just.
Hopefully they're better ports than the Horizon port, which was not great.
I think it's getting better. They're getting a bit better. Anyway, the way you said, I think you're going to get it. I remember when we were doing this episode for what is current generation, I said, all I want is like a locked guaranteed 1080p. And you're like, I think you're going to get it. And then Xbox just comes along and says, no, you're not.
You're going to get more PC games.
Yeah, but it is a very safe. Like, if even Sony's doing it, then you're going to get.
Yeah, you know it's pretty safe. The only thing you won't see on PC is Mario and any Nintendo property. You won't see them, but that's the only ones. I think you'll see a lot of Sony stuff come there eventually. It wouldn't surprise me if in the lead up to God of War 2, they release God of War on PC.
Oh, that would be a pretty thing.
Mm. Yeah. All right, then, we might leave it there and fade off into the sunset. Where can we find you all? Sarah, do you want to be found? Do you want to find some stuff on Player 2?
Wow, you could have. Maybe you put that a little less creepily.
I don't know. Look, dudes, I'm still on Twitter at Esoteric, writing ever so occasionally, but probably for the rest of the year, taking a bit of a chill out, getting through the rest of the year, hoping 2021
is better.
Yeah, dude, it'd be great. So
got Sarah's recent review of Iron Danger.
Iron Harvest.
Not Iron Harvest. Iron Danger is what I reviewed. Whoops. Iron Harvest just went up last week. So
yeah.
Read that.
Yeah, but dudes, I'm still around on Twitter and stuff. So yeah.
Ken.
You can find me at Pixel Hunt on Twitter. I've just uploaded a episode of Player 2 Plays of Serious Sam. Probably going to do a few more.
Go find a game he likes again.
Yeah, I need to look for something that appeals once more.
That Star Crusades one on Game Pass or whatever it is.
Star Renegades. That's
Star Renegade, yeah. Do that one.
Yeah, that's legitimately good. As in, I really enjoy it. It's but Star Wars Squadrons is coming out in a few
weeks. Ooh, I know. It's Friday.
That totally crept up so quick, and I debated.
And I'm like, should I do it on PC? I've got a flight stick for the PC.
Oh, you should do it on PC then.
Yeah, do it.
Totally.
Yeah, and then Epic Game Store has got like a 15% off, a $15 off voucher. That's just ridiculous. Which you get for downloading Rocket League for free, which is just ridiculous.
Yes. Wait, what?
What?
They're giving you money to download Rocket League? Wait a second.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
If you go to Epic Game Store,
I'm going there right now.
If you download Rocket League for free, they will then give you a $15 voucher.
Can you just buy a $15 game, or is it just like a?
You have to buy a $30 game.
$30
game. Ah. I'm still going to download it because Rocket League is great, and I have no issues with having it on my PC.
Yeah.
And if for people that can't see the video, which is everyone, they are literally downloading it now.
You can see our eyes. We've just started going left, right, left, right.
You can see the
eyes.
Well,
we're wrapping up. We don't need to stay with internet connection anymore. What's the matter?
Tim.
Yes, you can.
Where can we find you?
You can find me at Pretendbeard on Twitter and on my Epic Store, just getting all of the free stuff.
And I've got one last little thing. The Player 2 Charity Marathon is happening on the 14th of November for the Terry Campisi Foundation once again. We were going to have a break this year, but with COVID kind of ruining all our other fundraising for the foundation, we thought the Player 2 Marathon needs to come back this year. So we're going to try and raise money for those that need it most in the southern New South Wales region. You can find me at Huso81 or Player2AU and head over to player2.net.au to check out all our news, reviews, videos, podcasts, opinion pieces, general waffle that we all do. It's a good place to be. Thank you for joining me on this episode, and we'll catch you next time. Bye.
Will we? Oh, look at this. Roller Coaster Tycoon 3 is going to actually load this time as well.
Yeah.
Roller Coaster Tycoon 3 is also free this week.
Which is great because it's a great game.
Oh, man. I played the crap out of this in London.
Like,
that dates it pretty precisely, though. Damn.
Yeah.
Like, at this point, like, the Epic Games Store is just like, I log in every week just to claim whatever free stuff they've got and just don't bother playing.
I've played a handful of the games. But
I've got a few things on there.
The most important. I've got a couple.